Okay, this is the hour we'll take your phone calls with Gary David as we talk about Hopi prophecy, the prophecy rock. What's that all about? That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Gary David. And Gary, before we take calls here, let's talk about the Hopi prophecy rock. What is that?
Sure. The prophecy rock is an actual boulder that's on the Hopi reservation. It's located on 3rd Mesa. Remember, the Hopi live on three primary mesas. These mesas are huge mesas. They're about 7 miles apart. And the Prophecy Rock is on 3rd Mesa. And it's a red sandstone boulder. If you have an internet, you can you find the graphics, graphic 6 and 7, the bottom two graphics. Show a drawing of Prophecy Rock, and then the bottom graphic shows a photo of myself and Grandfather Martin Geshwesioma. He's a Hopi elder, spiritual elder, and he's from the village of Hope Villa on 3rd Mesa, and he's from the Fire Clan. And he took us out to Prophecy Rock and explained the different symbols that are carved in this particular rock. And the symbols have to do with the end of the fourth world. If you look at the drawing, you see at the bottom of the drawing, there's a figure that's holding on to a vertical staff. And this figure is thought to be Masau, which I talked about before. The Masau holds an arrow pointing downward. That symbolizes pointing down to the underworld. Masau is God of the underworld. Masau is holding this staff that goes up to a square, and the square represents a village or a pueblo, a place of habitation. There's also a circle which represents the earth, and also there's a Christian cross that represents when the Spanish came in and brought the Catholic religion into Hopi land. There are two lines that go up from this square that you see on about in the middle of the rock, and there are two oblique lines going upward, and the bottom line is thought to be the Hopi way. The line goes has three circles, and the three circles are thought to be three world shakings or three world wars that will devastate the land. You see on the bottom line, you see a figure. And he is tending corn. This is the Hopi way. It's a life close to nature, life of earth-based rhythms, in harmony with the stars and the changing of the seasons. Now, above this particular line, there's a parallel line that goes upward, and there are four different figures that have their hands joined. And they are... The last one looks like it has two heads, so I don't know what to make of that. Mm-hmm. But this is the way of life divorced from the natural world. And you see this particular line ends in the zigzag, and it just abruptly ends. And this would be the end of the fourth world. For the people who are called the Two Hearts, the lower line is the path of the one heart, and the upper line is the path of two hearts. Two hearts, I guess, you know, people who are divorced from the ways of the Creator. You might think of, I mean, we call them two-faced. A person is two-faced. You know, he's duplicitous, lying, cheating, stealing, and so forth. These people will not do too well passing into the fifth world. But
well, we can see that happen. Let's take some calls here, Gary.
Sure.
They're lining up here for you. San Diego, California to start. Hey, Clint, go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing this evening?
Good, Clint.
I should say early morning.
Yeah, very early.
Oh, well, hey, George, I just want to thank you for everything you've done, and I've been following you since January of 2003 when you've come on the show, and you've done that excellent
job. We are coming up on the 10-year anniversary.
The 10-year anniversary, January 1st, correct?
Yep. I think we're going to celebrate it on the 6th on a Sunday night.
So right. Well, hey, I just want to say, Drew, I think you're a watcher from above that comes down and helps us all with your positivity. You know, I think you've done quite a great job. Well, hey, listen, my question, I have actually got two questions. Gary, I really appreciate you. This is an excellent show. You have to forgive me. I did catch something about a star or something coming on the winter solstice of December of 2013, next year. It was the blue star, or?
Yeah, the scientists have discovered this new comet, and it's supposed to be once in a civilization's lifetime event. I mean, it's going to be really spectacular.
I've always felt that December, I've always had December 2013 pop in my mind for the past years. I'm thinking, okay, this could be it, you know, the positive, and actually, two more questions. The second one is the gray gods that they've talked about, the Hopi.
Yeah, the Hopi have a major god called Masau.
Masau, yes.
Yeah, he looks exactly like an extraterrestrial gray.
Right.
And, you know, but he is benevolent. He taught the Hopi how to grow corn and so forth.
Right.
But in another sense, he's very scary. And, you know, he's a god of death in the underworld and the god of fire. And, you know,
sure.
You're going to meet that god when you pass on to the afterlife, according to the Hopi.
Right, because my question is that we've had abductions, you know, apparently on this earth, and we've had people being taken and been abducted by grays, and, you know, they've seen more negative, you know, on that aspect. So I didn't know if that was in the same type of group with them.
I think so, because, you know, a Masau is probably closer to the tall sort of gray.
Sure.
There are the small grays.
They're more short in stature. Yeah.
Sure. And Masau kind of directs, is thought to direct the smaller grays.
Okay.
He performs surgery, on abductees and so forth. So it's possible that, you know, with the tradition of the flying shield of these creatures coming down in these flying saucers or flying shields,
interesting.
You know, the Masau could be one of these tall gray aliens.
Right, right. And third but not least, or last, I should say, is that the Hopi talked about three great wars, world wars, and we've already had two. And I'm thinking if they're, you know, correlating to the third world war, is those negative lines, that's going to give us the last push of this fourth world, and then began the new fifth world into positivity?
Yeah, maybe? there are a lot of prophecies that talk about this destruction
mm-hmm.
of the Earth, of the U.S. in particular,
mm-hmm.
and by a nuclear war.
Right.
But there will be people who survive this and will pass into the fifth world, and the fifth world will be much better. It will live a cleaner existence without pollution, without the disharmony and chaos we seem to find today. But the Hopi definitely believe that this is a rough period we're going through with world war and wars, particularly in the Middle East. They talk about wars beginning in a place where the first light of wisdom appeared.
Right.
And that might be the Middle East, it might be Egypt. You know, we think of the Arab Spring and so forth. So these wars are definitely in the prophetic visions of the Hopi.
Who helped the Hopi with the prophecies, Gary?
Well, they received these prophecies from the spirits, from the Kachinas, and from Masau. And the elders sit in the kivas. These are underground prayer chambers, and they receive these visions from the spirits. So I don't think they had outside help. They just received these visions and they passed them along to help the people survive into the next world.
Were they all tuned in, the entire group?
No, usually there's a group of elders or spiritual, they call them Kikmangwi. They're spiritual elders that, you know, not everybody receives prophecies, but the elders talk to the rest of the people and inform the rest of the tribe what they have seen in their vision, in their prophetic visions.
All right, back to the phones. Bangor, Maine, Ricky's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ricky, thank you. Go ahead.
Well, thank you guys. This is such an excellent show. Mainstream science has kind of dismissed a lot of these ancient cultures' stories. They call them, you know, just made up, which seems a little ridiculous to me, especially considering the similarities across the whole Earth. But they've always told us that it's impossible for these other civilizations to get here from other planets because the distances are just too far. It's just too difficult. Now NASA has announced that faster-than-light travel probably isn't that difficult, and you can go faster than the speed of light in a warp bubble, and they're actually building a test rig right now. I wonder, my question is, do you think that science will ever kind of come to terms with the reality that a lot of these legends are probably true and, you know, get some real scientific research, or is the fifth world going to have to knock them in the head before they, you know, take this stuff seriously? Because this is as important as anything they could study, in my opinion.
Well, the scientists, I think, are coming around, and they're more and more scientists willing to merge their way of thinking with spirituality, with mythology, and the meaning of myth as not just a funny story or something that the ancient people told just to pass the time. It's sacred knowledge that's passed on from generation to generation, and it's an intuitive knowledge of the way the spirit works, of the way the creator works. And I think more and more scientists are coming around to this holistic view of the universe, of a definite merging of empirical science and spirituality.
What got them to think that way, finally?
Well, I think, you know, we're entering a new age, George, and scientists are slowly coming around to seeing that this is not simply a mechanistic universe. You know, we have a quantum physics that's explaining the universe in bizarre and strange ways. And I think these explanations are closer to the way that the ancients saw the world. These quantum physics is much closer to the way the ancients and the ancient myths explained the world.
Let's go to Fort Smith in Arkansas. Mary's with us, east of the Rockies. Hey, Mary, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Oh, what a wonderful show. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Mary.
We emailed back and forth about Rock Eagle about 3 years ago. And
refresh my memory about the Rock Eagle.
It's an effigy, and I was traveling to some ancient Indian mound sites, and that was a part of it. It's a giant eagle that's, you know, like 7,000 years old, and with built with quartz. And you can only from the sky really see that it's an eagle or a bird.
Is this the poverty mound?
Not poverty, but it's in Georgia. But you had written in an email that there was another one. You told me about it at Poverty Point, but I did not get to Poverty Point.
Right. There's a huge bird effigy at this Poverty Point in Louisiana that you can only recognize from the air.
Yeah, that's the same. There are a few of those, but I wanted to speak of something else. This is just a wonderful show. Years ago, when I was living in the West, and I had lived in Sedona, I was really into all this and the Corn Mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So because of that, He told me, he said, listen, me and these guys were hiking around Sedona, and we literally almost fell into this cave-like dwelling, and everything was just left as if the, you know, the people had just gone away, and there were these ancient ears of corn.
Right, yeah.
And he gave me one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I stewarded it for 9 years until Spirit told me to take this trip, and I had to go and bury it, and all this stuff is all a wild story. But this corn was so powerful.
And not genetically modified either.
I'm telling you, George, if you if anybody could have touched this corn and understood what I understood, when I put it on my chakras, I would have cosmic experiences and visions. And I realized these people were having fun grinding corn. This wasn't anything like what we do. I mean, it really showed you, if you connect with the earth and spirit and you respect your food and where it comes from.
You know, there's a very touching story about a Hopi corn. Now, Hopi corn is very small. It's about a little larger than your index finger in length. And
this was bigger than that,
okay,
so I don't know.
Maybe they had better success of growing, but when the tribes were first coming out of the earth, different tribes, they were told, well, you can select a certain ear of corn, and that will be your particular ear of corn that you can grow.
Interesting.
And the Hopi, the Navajo took a huge ear of corn. And the Apache took another large ear of corn. But the Hopi took the smallest ear of corn, and that meant that they're going to have the toughest time surviving out in the desert. And they're basically a humble people, and that's why they selected the smallest ear of corn. And like you say, that you can see these cliff dwellings, and you can see the ears of corn and pot shards that are left. Like they just left just a day or so ago. You know, it's just amazing how the Southwest, and because of the aridity, keeps things the way they are for years and years.
Gary, would you give us your websites and where your books can be obtained?
Sure. It's theorionzone.com is my website. And you can order from there, or you can order from AdventuresUnlimitedPress.com, or also Amazon and Barnes & Noble have them. So you can get them in a lot of different places.
All right, well, we're going to come back in just a second. Gary, do you travel much, speaking engagements?
Well, tomorrow I'm, in fact, going to Sedona to speak to a group down in Sedona. But, I travel here and there. I was... last spring, I talked to a couple different MUFON groups, MUFON Orange County and MUFON LA. So
they're both good groups, too.
Oh, they're great groups.
All right, Gary, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM, and we're going to take final phone calls fast night right here, and I'll also tell you what's in store for our next show. I'll be right back. On our next Coast to Coast program, among the things we'll be talking about, Barbara Peterson joins us, and we'll talk a little bit more about genetically modified foods and, of course, take your calls as we lead ourselves into Friday, where things get a little spookier along with open lines. Let's come back in a moment, though, with Gary David and take your final calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Gary David with us, final segment. Gary, I got to tell you, of all the people I've interviewed about Hopi prophecy, you have to be one of the best.
Well, thank you, George. I appreciate that.
Very knowledgeable. And when you were doing your research for your latest book, was there anything that you came across that shocked you?
Shocked me. The book that I wrote, Star Shrines and Earthworks of the Desert Southwest, I came across some earthworks that... are pretty amazing, and not many people know about these earthworks. They're right in the city of Phoenix right now. You can go and see them. In fact, there's one place called Pueblo Grande that is a huge platform mound, larger than a football field, and it's like 30 feet high. And a people called the Hohokam, an ancient people that lived along with the Hopi during the same period, and even a little earlier, these Hohokam people built these huge flat-topped pyramids, and they built buildings on top of these, and they dug these canals, 400 miles of canals. Some of these canals were like 75 feet across, the largest ones, and they had these ball courts similar to the Maya. So there was a whole civilization living in the Phoenix area and called the Hohokam that not many people really know about, but they existed for 1,000 years in that area in this extreme desert climate.
All right, to the phones we go. Luke is in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and on the air with us. Hey, Luke, go ahead.
Hi, thank you, George. I want to thank you very much for keeping the Hopi message alive all these years. Coast to Coast has been wonderful.
Well, you're welcome.
Respecting the Hopi so much. Yeah, hi, Gary. I lived with the Hopi from the 70s through the 80s, off and on, and was adopted by them in 78.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And I had remarkable experiences, especially in the summer of 74. And I even had a girlfriend come visit me at the very end of my stay at the first part, my first stay at the Hopi, mm-hmm. from June, July, August at the snake dance, my first snake dance.
Oh, yeah.
And we had this extraordinary experience for 3 nights in a row with orbs of light. So I'd love to share that with you sometime personally and in a deeper way, because it's hard to talk about publicly, but it was a remarkable experience with these floating orbs of light.
Well, you can go to my website. My email is on my website.
Sure, I'll be glad to. Yeah, I wanted to point out that the Kachina also, the Kachinas also were very, what was important to the Kachina very much was the sun god, the sun deity.
Oh, yeah, the Tawa is
the
sun god, and that's, you know, one of the main gods, mm-hmm. along with Sotuknang, the sky god, mm-hmm. and Asau, the Tawa. The Tawa is, of course, very important.
Light, yeah.
And, you know, the Hopi elders watch where the sun rises each day, and they gauge on the horizon where it rises. And this way, they can have an agricultural calendar that they know what part of the year they're in, you know.
So the February to July was the time of the Kachinas.
Right.
They brought it. They would start their ceremonies with the sun god, with the sun deity.
Sure, yeah.
My Hopi father, he was dead before I was adopted. My Hopi mother was Carolyn Tawangiyama, her husband was Tawangiyama, which Tawa means light.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was the Sun Clan, and she was the Badger Clan.
Oh, yeah, Sun Clan is very important.
I have a Hopi name and everything. It's wonderful.
Well, please get a hold of me, and we can...
Yeah, I'd love to share with you some... it's hard to speak about publicly, but some remarkable things happened that I think...
Yeah, I suggest that to the listeners that you can go up to the Hopi Reservation, mm-hmm. and a good place to start is probably Second Mesa. Mm-hmm. There's the Hopi Cultural Center.
Yeah, I stay there I've stayed there many times.
And, you know, a friend of mine, and George, you had this guest not long ago, Tom Mills.
Yes, good guest.
Yeah, and he and his mother started the Hopi Cultural Center back in the 70s.
And I know Martin pretty well, Martin Goswasilma.
Yeah, Grandfather Martin is still, he's just turned 90.
I lived at Hot Villa.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's the main spiritual center right now of the Hopi people.
I know a lot of the elders who speak for the Hopi are from there.
A lot of the prophecies came out of Third Mesa and Hot Villa. Yeah.
Thomas Bunyaka did a great job of
speaking. Bunyaka, yeah, I heard him speak.
Knew all the elders really well.
Yeah.
I'd love to share with you further.
They're amazing people, and they're very humble. And
mystical and spiritual, and, you know, all the other, the Apache, the Navajo, they're in awe of the Hopi for their spiritual way.
I think so, and because the Hopi were here first, you know. The Apache and the Navajo came down from the north. But the Hopi have been here for thousands of years in the region of Arizona and New Mexico, you know, in this general region. So I think that's why the Navajo kind of hold them in awe.
Were they warring at all, Gary?
Initially, yeah. And there were tension between the Navajo and the Apache. and the Hopi people, because the cultures were so different. The Navajo were sheep herders, and they were migratory, they were nomadic, and the Hopi were farmers. And the lifestyle was totally different, and the language was also different. So, you know, there's always been tension between the Diné or Navajo and the Hopi.
Okay, back to the calls we go. It's Michael's turn in New Orleans. Hey, Michael, thank you.
Hey, George and Gary, thank you very much. You guys are great. George, I've been studying your stuff for a long time. Great. I called because I want to try to help you guys connect the dots.
All right.
Believe me when I tell you, they don't want you to know this. Okay? I know that we're all knowledgeable in our own fields, but anyway, here it goes. Just follow me for a second.
All right.
Take Phi, 1.618. Compare it to 1 and graph it. You get the golden mean, a.k.a. Fibonacci sequence. Are we following me here?
Not yet, but go ahead.
Okay. It's also known as the sacred spiral. This is what the ancestors are trying to tell us. It exists in all things. Our DNA, when a tree sprouts its branches, when we look at all the galaxies, a snail shell, you guys are familiar with it. When we look at a hurricane, right?
Yeah.
As above, so below. Look at the Earth in your mind for a minute and picture the equator. On the northern hemisphere, hurricanes spin anti-clockwise or counterclockwise. On the southern hemisphere, they spin clockwise. Polarity, alpha, omega, positive, negative, male, female. What I'm talking about here is frequency. Basically, not to throw this word out there on your show, but the word of God is harmonic resonant frequency. It causes all things to spin into existence. It's from this spin that we get our gravity. Now picture the Milky Way as an equatorial plane, as above, so below, positive, negative. It's a frequency reversal, guys. This is what they're hiding from you. This is what they don't want you to know. And remember, my name is Michael. Kachina means teacher, and the mask just came off of that teacher.
All right. We'll get your reaction to that, Gary, a little very scientific.
Well, you know, the Hopi have carved spirals into the rock. That's one of their main symbols that you see when you go looking for rock art. You see a lot of these spirals, and it's thought to represent a kind of a portal between worlds, between dimensions. It represents a transition from one world to another. So you see these spirals in rock art. You see them on the pottery. The spiral is very important to the Hopi people and to Native Americans in general.
Was there anything that scared the Hopi other than Mesahu, the god?
Well, the Hopi have been scared, I think, mostly by the incursion of the Spanish and the incursion of the white people. They went out to the desert, to this very remote area, in order to be by themselves in an area that they said that no one else would want. But when they started to see the settlers in the 19th century coming into their land, I think this really frightened them, and you know, they had to adjust their life, their way of living, to a whole new set of circumstances.
Well, maybe so. Let's go to Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Robert, you're on with Gary David. Go ahead.
Good morning, Gary. The question is, I was out in Arizona, and I was going down to a lot of canyons, and I saw hundreds of abandoned sites, and where did they go, and what caused them to abandon that? Was it lack of water, or that I've always wondered that, and you might have the answer to that.
Well, yeah, they abandoned these sites probably because it got too dry. You know, some of the sites didn't have springs. Maybe the spring dried up, they moved closer to the river during extreme droughts. So they would build a pueblo or a site, a habitation site, and then they would suddenly leave the site. And I think they were told by Masao, well, it's time to go. It's time to move on. Now, the Hopi built pueblos and sites as kind of marking their territory, footprints across the land. It's said that they built these stone villages, and then they left them very suddenly sometimes, and they'd break the pottery and just leave right away. And these sites that you see across the Southwest in Arizona, they're part of the Hopi, and the Hopi still believe that they belong to them, but they've just moved on to another site.
Wow.
Okay, thanks, Robert. Good to have you part of the program. And then we have Sarah in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Sarah, go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. It's my first time calling.
Good.
I was wondering if Gary could tie in the Barringer Meteor Crater to any of this?
The Barringer, yeah, it's right by the Hopi. I have a chapter in my book, Eye of the Phoenix, about the Barringer Meteor Crater. I think it was created about 50,000 years ago. You can go examine it today. And I found out that there was kind of like a meteorite trade in North America, that they traded these meteorites, and they saw these as sacred objects, these, you know, sky stones that had fallen.
They prayed to these stones, didn't they?
No, they did, and they had I've read where some of these meteorites were wrapped up like mummies, okay, and they were kind of held very sacred, and they were buried like a mummy would be buried. You know, so, you know, they thought these were sky beings that had come down to the earth. So, you know, it is a very, very sacred stone for them because they came from the celestial realm.
Well, it's interesting, too, in the Middle East, in Mecca, they have a black stone there. It's a meteorite, and they worship that as well.
Exactly. At the Kaaba in Mecca, there's the meteorite that is enshrined in a big silver casing that and I think people all around the world have worshiped meteorites. They did so in Egypt. The Benben stone is a meteorite stone that stood on top of an obelisk in the temple of Heliopolis. You know, these were worshipped in Egypt and of course in Mecca and basically all over the world.
We've got Robert in Redding, California now. Hi, Robert, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. Good morning, Gary. Hey, real quick, it's kind of a two-part question here. You hear a lot, of course, about Mayan prophecy, and you also hear a lot about the Hopi. I just want to know how prevalent this is among other Indian tribes as far as prophecies. And you also hear about the U.S. government, you know, stockpiling insure for an upcoming apocalypse. Is the U.S. government, to your knowledge, or any government for that matter, taking any of these prophecies seriously?
You know, I can't really speak about the U.S. government. You don't really know what they're up to a lot of times. As far as other Indian tribes, yeah, the Lakota Sioux have different prophecies of the end of the world. So I think most Native American tribes have this idea of a cyclic or cyclic kind of world ages coming, passing away, and a new age coming forward. So I think this idea of the new world coming is prevalent in a lot of Native American belief systems.
Well, and I am fascinated, Gary, about the fact that there are so many similarities, not just with the Hopis and other Native American tribes and systems here in North America, but it's all over Europe as well. It's everywhere.
You know, it's a little harder to find in Europe, but because, you know, the Hopi are still living the ways that they were living 1,000 years ago to a great extent. There are still Hopi farmers. They go out into the fields every day. They're still performing the same ceremonies that they did 1,000 years ago. When you think about the Hopi have lived there for over 1,000 years in those same houses, performing the same prayers, saying the same prayers, performing the same ceremonies. You know, the village of Oribe, which is on Third Mesa, is the oldest continuously inhabited village in the North American continent, there since 1100 AD. So there's a real continuity of ceremony and spirituality that you can see on the Hopi Reservation.
Portland, Oregon. Jeff, let's squeeze you in here. Go ahead, Jeff, real fast.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. I spent some time in Tempe at ASU there, and in Mesa there is a Mormon temple, a very old building, and in their garden at the visitor center in the rear is a stone about 3 feet high and about 5 feet wide, and it has these carvings. This is a prehistoric stone, and I didn't really know what it was. It's very unusual, and I was I'm a Native American. I was at the Indian Hospital on 16th Street in Indian School. It was across the street at a place called Drumbeat Indian Arts, and that's when I realized that the Hopi had made that, and it depicts that portal that you described, and it's in the garden there in the visitor center. Anybody can go and see it, and it by the way, that store has a lot of artwork from what I consider to be a very gentle and loving people, but this stone is fascinating, and until hearing you talk, I didn't realize what that was, and then putting that together with the artwork that I saw in that store, it's incredible. This thing is unbelievable.
Perfect. Have you seen that at all, Gary?
No, I haven't seen that. I'm interested to check that out. That sounds very interesting that a Mormon temple would have, you know, a Hopi carving or rock carving in it. That sounds fascinating, and it's something that I'll definitely check out the next time I'm in Mesa.
We shall watch and see if the Hopi prophecy unfolds, Gary, huh?
Very good. Yeah, I think it's in the process of unfolding right now, and many Hopis say that we're at the end of the fourth world, and we'll pass peacefully into the fifth world.
Well, let's hope it is peacefully indeed. Thanks so much, Gary. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.